The following podcast is a W2M Network original production. Visit W2Mnet.com for all of our other great podcasts, plus news, reviews, articles, and opinions from the worlds of wrestling, video games, football, and entertainment.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode number 7 of MMA to the Max. I am your host, Robert Taylor, and I am joined by my co-host, Joseph Hudson. How are you doing today, Joe? Today's a very special episode. We have UFC star, former LFA middleweight champion, their very first. You probably saw him just recently on the Weidman Gaslam card, knocking out Rafael Natal and probably securing his release from the UFC. One Eric Anders. How you doing today, Mr. Anders?
Man, I'm doing all right, man. Appreciate you guys having me.
Appreciate you doing the show. The honor is definitely all of ours.
Sure.
So. Joe, what are you drinking this week? What is the beer of the week?
Beer of the week is Lagunitas IPA, the India Pale Ale. It's a delicious beer that goes down smooth every time.
Well, I'm a little different this week, and it's probably going to revoke my man card, but I am drinking an Angry Orchard Green Apple Hard Cider. My throat's a little messed up, so don't judge me.
All right. Eric, come on.
At least it's not like a Smirnoff Ice or anything like that.
Eric just gave you some redemption on that one, dude, because that's true. It could be worse. Right on, man.
All right, so jumping into this real quick, my first question is, everywhere I read about you, you're listed. Your nickname is listed as your boy, but everywhere they announce your fights, it's Frankenstein. What's with the confusion? What am I doing wrong?
Man, it used to be Frankenstein, but now it's your boy. Bruce Buffer got it right.
Okay.
You know, there was some confusion at the that last legacy fight against Brennan Allen. You know, I fought for legacy the first time. It was Frankenstein, and the second time it was your boy. So I don't think they quite knew that, and they just kind of announced it as Frankenstein. But Bruce got it right, so that's what it is.
From now on,
awesome. Professional, Bruce Buffer getting it right.
You know, he don't make mistakes, man. That guy's a professional through and through.
100%.
How awesome was it to finally hear your name called by his voice?
I was pretty badass, man. He gave me a little pound before the fight and everything, man. Real cool dude, man.
Definitely. Just a question. How did making your UFC debut stack up to, say, your first venture out there for Crimson Tide and playing out there? Did you have the jitters? I know before a game you always get that pregame jitters, you know, but once the game starts, you're okay. How was that with your first actual UFC fight compared to – going out there for your first NCAA game?
Man, to be honest with you, my first NCAA game, like, the thing about that is, like, I was a redshirt freshman the first time I ever played. So, you know, it was like mop-up duty. if we were beating a team probably, you know, by 50 points or so, and they stuck me out there, like, the last 3 minutes of the game or something like that. My first game starting, I was a little bit nervous because you really don't know what to expect.
Yeah.
But with the UFC, my first UFC fight, you know, man, I don't think I've ever been calmer or more relaxed mentally or physically before any kind of competitive activity, you know, whether it be a football game or any of my previous fights, man, I just, you know, had a lot of mental clarity, and, you know, I knew I was good to go, and, you know, I just knew that I was going to knock out.
Yeah, and I remember watching when we were watching the fight, the commentators were making note, like, when you dropped Natal and he was grabbing for your leg and he was trying to work off his back, they were like, Anders does not want to be there. But if they had saw your previous fights, especially that five-round war with Brennan Allen, you're not uncomfortable off your back or on the ground at all. Your guard game was incredible.
Yeah, not at all. You know, I train all aspects and all situations. Not only do I train it, but I see it visually. So, you know, I know I only had like 10 days to get ready for the fight, but, you know, I do a lot of visualization. You know, it's kind of like lay in bed, you know, my eyes closed, and imagine the fight and picture the fight, if you will. As it goes down. So, you know, that dude has the most takedowns in middleweight history. So,
yep.
You know, I kind of figured that at some point I could possibly end up on my back. So, you know, I'm very comfortable on my back, you know, whether it's on the canvas, against the cage, or whatever, any portion of the fight, anywhere the fight could take place or any situation I can be in, I'm very comfortable.
So, correct me if I'm wrong, but you started out in jiu-jitsu, right? That was your first martial art, was jiu-jitsu?
I kind of trained them all at the, you know, jiu-jitsu and boxing and kickboxing simultaneously. At first, I just kind of gravitated and, you know, got better at, you know, the jiu-jitsu and wrestling much faster than I picked up the striking.
Okay, that makes sense. I think with the football background, you know, the ability to take people down and hold them down in body control, that might have been, one of the reasons why you were successful, I think, in jiu-jitsu right off the bat.
Well, also the thing is with jiu-jitsu, man, you can roll hard and train hard and, you know, people call it sparring, but I don't think it's sparring if you're not getting punched, you know?
Yeah.
So, man, you can roll jiu-jitsu. You can do jiu-jitsu as hard as you want for as long as you can with no real serious, you know, injury or consequence. If you try and do that with striking, man, you're taking shots to the head and you're beating up your body and, you know, could potentially get knocked out. So, you know, with jiu-jitsu and wrestling, you can do it at a fast pace, at a high level, with little to no risk of injury versus, you know, striking. If you try to go too hard, you know, you're hurting people and, you know, somebody's getting knocked out and, you know, things like that. So I think just with that being said, that's probably the reason why I got better at jiu-jitsu and wrestling much better, much faster than I did the striking.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So that's what a lot of people say with jiu-jitsu is you can quote unquote spar at full speed all the time. Because the tap out saves you from breaking a limb or, you know, getting choked out and all that stuff. So, yeah, that makes sense.
Well, speaking of your striking, then I want to talk about your pro debut against Josh Raspberry for Strikehard. One punch. it was really your first and only punch he threw the entire fight. And the guy just crumbled. And I believe he was actually jumping towards the ref to save him as you started to get on top of him. How'd that feel, just getting out in 40 seconds?
Oh, man, it's good. You know, my goal for my pro fights, you know, for all my fights is to finish the fight. So the sooner the better. You know, if I can get it done in 45 seconds, that's cool. Or if it takes, you know, 14 minutes and 59 seconds, you know, that's always my aim to get a victory and to get out of there unscathed with little to no damage. So I thought it was a pretty good professional debut. And, you know, I've kind of been on the same track ever since.
Yeah, it looks like it. And it allows you to get that quick turnaround like you did after your first fight, just a couple months later to your next.
Yeah, I had a pretty extended amateur career. I had like 23 or 25 amateur fights or something like that, you know, over the course of about four or five years, I think, for my amateur career. So when I turned pro, I was ready to take it to the next level already. You know, it really wasn't too many growing pains as a professional. I kind of got all those out of the way as an amateur.
Yeah. We interviewed Jose Torres from Titan FC last week, and he had the same kind of a background, just 25 amateur fights. So it seems like that might be the way to go nowadays. I mean, because look at how well he's doing. Look how well you're doing. You both had all those amateur fights to kind of work out all the kinks. That might be the way to go for new fighters nowadays when they want to get into it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, I haven't been doing this since I was, you know, 5 years old like some of these guys. You know, I have zero experience in, in combat sports. Like, I got JV level experience. I wrestled through my freshman year of high school, and that was it. So I really don't have any experience. So I really, you know, took my time and cultivated a skill set as an amateur. That way, when I turn pro, I'm ready to go. And because, you know, I kind of figured, you know, with the whole Alabama thing and, you know, if I finish my fights and do what I'm supposed to do, then there was no doubt that I'd make it to the UFC. So let me take my time in this portion of my career. And then, you know, when I turn pro, you know, it's going to happen pretty quick. And in 8 fights in less than 2 years, you know, here we are.
And did you envision your UFC debut being on a short notice call like that, less than a month, I believe, since your previous fight?
Man, you know, the short notice fights are an excellent way to get into the UFC. So You know, it's not like I was sitting here waiting for the phone to ring, you know, with ants in my pants or anything like that. You know, I stay ready. I'm always training in the gym. If I'm not at home, I'm at the gym training or running or lifting or doing something to enhance the skill set or my cardio or strength, speed, stamina, stuff like that. So when the phone rang, it said, yeah, let's do it. I'm healthy and, you know, whatever, 10 days, 5 days, whatever, let's do it.
How did Ed Soares feel about it? I mean, he was happy for you?
I'm sure. You know, I haven't talked to him directly, but, you know, I'm sure he likes it when guys from his promotion make it to the UFC. I think there's more fighters in the UFC from Legacy, especially now if they've merged with RFA, than there are any other promotion in the world. So, you know, I'm sure he has a lot to do with that, with picking up, you know, good fighters and good quality fighters and whatnot. So I'm sure he likes to see him come, you know, make a stop in, at Legacy and then, you know, go out there and make waves in the UFC. So I seriously doubt that he had a problem or an issue with me leaving.
No, I think he has a good eye for talent and he knows where, you know, that, you know, Legacy is like AAA, man. It's great, great fighters, a lot of good competition there, but the UFC is where you want to be.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he knows that. He's been around long enough. You know, he's been a manager to plenty of fantastic fighters in the UFC, so I think he gets that completely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you're not sure for his first champion he's let go. I mean, I believe Roberto Sanchez was the flyweight champion when he made his debut just recently. So,
yeah, you know, a lot of guys from, you know, Khalil Roundtree, Bula Valentina, Derek Lewis, man, the list goes on and on of, you know.
Oh, yeah.
A great caliber fighters from Legacy.
Yep.
So I had a question that I was very curious about. You fought once for Bellator. It was on Bellator. It was Bellator 162 against Brian White, and just like your pro debut, you one punch dropped him, and then should have been stopped a little sooner when I was watching it, but the ref just let you keep pounding on him, so it went to 23 seconds. What was that like, your first shot on, like, the big national stage in a big national company?
Once again, man, you know, I just, you know, I'm very confident in my preparation. You know, I had a lot of time to get ready for that fight. That was not a short-notice fight. So I knew without a shadow of a doubt that, you know, I was ready for that fight, as I am with all my fights. So with, you know, preparation breeds confidence. So, I live in the gym and, there's just not a doubt in my mind. Whenever I step in that cage, I'm going to come out there with the victory. Some of them come sooner than others. You know, sometimes it goes to a decision like it did with Brennan Allen, but certainly always aiming for that finish.
Did you get a chance to work with Scott Coker at all in your very short tenure at Bellator?
As a matter of fact, when, you know, after the fight, you know, I kind of go around politicking because, you know, Bellator, that was my, you know, the biggest fight I had up until that point. And so, you know, I went around talking to the matchmakers and, you know, shook Scott Coker's hand, you know, appreciate it. You know, thank you for the opportunity. And he didn't know who I was. He was like, who are you fighting again? I was like, oh, man, you know, whatever, guy named Brian White, you know. So I thought I made a good impression. You know, another guy from our gym named Omar Johnson, we both fought on the card. Mm-hmm. It was in Memphis, which is 4 hours away from Birmingham, and we still – sold over $6,000 worth of tickets just for two guys to fight four hours away. So
nice.
You know, and then, you know, I went out there and, you know, knocked the guy out in 26 seconds. So I thought I did my part, sold tickets, put on a show, got a victory, finished the guy. But you know, that was kind of it, man. Never heard from him again.
There was no story behind that of why you never continue with them. You just never got another call for another fight.
Man, I didn't ask. And, you know, I'm not gonna beg anybody. You know what I'm saying? So, I think I'm almost certain I may have fought one other time for a regional promotion, and I was fighting for Legacy. So, I mean, it really wasn't too big of a deal. You know, because I end up, the thing with Bellator is if you fight for Bellator and you do well for Bellator, you're gonna fight for Bellator for a while. Versus if you fight for Legacy or like local promotions. And you make it to the UFC, you know that's the ultimate goal is the UFC. They're the pinnacle of the sport, have the best fighters, best promotion, best production value. So, you know, the UFC is the goal. So, you know, I'm kind of glad I didn't get locked into that, into a Bellator contract.
Yeah, it worked out to your benefit not to get in it. Again, Bellator is a great company, and they're definitely growing and moving up and acquiring some great fighters. But we all know that it's 80%+ of the top fighters are in the UFC, you know, and Bellator isn't that other 20. It's spread out between the other organizations, you know, like ONE or Extreme Belkut, whatever that is over there in Russia. So, yeah, you want to be in the UFC, man. It worked out to your favor, I think, and so far, impressive.
So everything happens for a reason. I'm just, you know, glad to have the opportunity to show what I can do and, you know, take over the middleweight division, which I think I'm more than capable of doing.
Yeah, you're a scary man. I think you're going to do just fine.
Did you have any opponent in mind for your next fight? I know you went on vacation, judging from your Instagram photos and everything. Looked like you were having a great time, but do you have anybody in mind when you come back, anybody you're looking at?
Man, I wanted to fight Elias Theodoro in Madison Square Garden, but apparently he's got a fight lined up already. They just haven't announced it. Mm-hmm. And Jack Marshman, I like that fight. I like his style. I think it would be a fun and entertaining fight for both of us. Just to get in there and bang it out and, you know, see who ends up with, you know, without a swollen face and, you know, who gets their hand raised at the end. You know, I think that would be a fun fight.
I would offer up Sam Alvey, because at least somebody like you with your style would be able to force him to fight instead of just standing there like you did with Rashad. So,
well, look, Sam Alvey's top 15, so if I fight top 15, I'm cool to fight anybody on this planet. I promise you I am. The contract has got to get renegotiated if they want me to fight a top 15, top 10 guy. I'm all for it. Let's do it. You know, I just want to be paid, compensated for my efforts, you know.
Oh, yeah, of course.
As you should be, man. You guys are the ones out there that are putting it all on the line, man. Without the fighters, we have nothing. So, yeah, compensate you appropriately. You put on impressive shows that are enjoyable to watch, you know? That's exactly what Dana White asks for, right?
And I like that Sam Alvey fight, you know? He's going to stand there, and I'm going to stand there, and we're going to throw leather. And, you know, I'm quite confident, you know, I can chip up that smile. Walk away with the W, if not finish him. I'm not sure if he's been finished. I'm not, like, I don't know his record. I haven't, like, looked too in depth. You know, I've seen two or three of his fights, and
yeah,
I like his style. I like what he brings to the table, and, you know, like I said, he's top 15. So, you know, I certainly do wonders for my career to go out there, beat him up a little bit, chip up his smile, and you know, turn him into frowning Sam Alvey.
And, yeah, I think the only person to finish him in the UFC was Derek Brunson when he blitzed him. Yeah, I think Hafey on Natal was top 15 when you fought him.
Who?
I think Natal was top 15 when you fought him, wasn't he? At the time, or?
Man, 25. I think he was 25.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I don't think he was top
15. He was, you know, he, like, 2 years ago, he was top 15, you know, trying to make a run for that top 10 spot. Now, he fought Whitaker, went to a decision with Whitaker, then got knocked out by Bosch.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think Natal was a slouch, but, you know, he's certainly, you know, he's in that 34 range, so he's definitely out of his athletic prime. You know, he's been knocked out a few times, so his chin was definitely gone. So I want one of these young lions that they got in the UFC. And I'm not sure how old Sam is, but, you know, he seems to be at the top of his game.
I'd just be worried about pissing off his wife, man. She seems
Sam
like she's tough, too. Yeah, his wife in his corner. She's always in his corner, yeah. His wife's always there.
I was about to say, man, they don't want to see my wife when she's upset, I promise you.
Get her in a corner, so at the end of the fight, it can be battle of the wives.
I don't know if Miss Alvey wants any of Miss Anders.
Yeah, no, I've seen pictures of, yeah, I wouldn't. That, she looks like she can handle her own, man.
Yeah, you know, she's feisty, she's strong, you know. I've seen her in action once or twice.
You guys do a lot of working out together?
Nah, you know, she sometimes, like, she likes to lift heavy, so sometimes she'll need a spot, so I'll go to the gym. But, you know, we love each other, don't get me wrong, but we want to be up each other's ass all day. So, you know, she does her, she, you know, I don't lift weights too heavy, so too mm-hmm. much. So all my training consists of, like, running and, you know, mixed martial arts training. You know, she likes to lift weights and do her cardio and stuff. So, you know, she works out where she works out. I train where I train. And then, you know, we wake up together, see each other in the middle of the day and then again at night. So, you know, that's just kind of the way that we like it. I think that, you know, people who are around each other all the time, it's cool at first in the honeymoon phase. Then as, you know, time goes on, they kind of start getting on each other's nerves. So I think we have a very healthy relationship and see each other just enough and, you know, have our time away from each other as well, which is very important.
Yeah, that's good. That leaves you still, you know, wanting and appreciating that time that you do get to share with each other. So that's good, man.
Sure.
Go ahead, Robert.
I was going to say, speaking of your strength, your conditioning, you know, you're working out and everything. I was actually going to ask this earlier and I slipped my mind, but I was curious. Saw the 30 for 30 series and it included Scott Cochran, I believe that was his name. Your strength, the Alabama strength and conditioning coach. Mm-hmm. Was he as crazy and nuts as they portrayed him on the show when it came to what he was trying to teach?
Man, he's pretty amped up all the time, man. I'm not sure how he does that, how he's, you know, maybe that's just his personality or whatever, but yeah, he's always amped up, you know, he's always, you know, yelling. And, you know, when I was there, you know, I was always, you know, I'm no angel, but I was, you know, kind of did what I was supposed to do. So he'd come over there with that, yeah, yeah, yeah. And I'm just like, listen, man, it's 5 o'clock in the morning. I don't need to hear that. You go holler at one of these freshmen with that, you know. So, man, he's very cool. I love Scott Cochran. He just, you know, I'm a pretty mellow and chill dude, and he's on the other end of the spectrum. So, all that yelling and stuff, that's just not my style.
I do want to point out real quick, too, that my co-host here, my cousin, is a USC fan. So,
South Carolina or Southern California?
University of Southern California.
The only USC, right?
That's right. The USC. The real one.
My manager, Jason House, is a USC fan. I give him shit all the time, especially because they just played each other last year. So.
Yeah. One of the fans of the show and a friend of mine, Jason Stone from Alabama. So we refused to watch that game with each other, but we were texting back and forth and I had a good 5 minutes of shit talk I was throwing his way. And then after that, I lost my phone. I don't know what happened.
Yeah. It fell on the toilet, right?
I think one of my kids grabbed it and they ran outside, you know, and I didn't chase him down. I mean, otherwise I totally would have responded, but
he tries to talk about, you know, USC football. And I'm just like, listen, man, I know what real football is and looks like, and USC ain't it.
Oh, shots fired. Oh, I love it.
Man. Hey, we're rebuilding. We got a little hit, some damage with our recruits and our scholarships, and we're coming back a little bit better now. You know, we used to have your old offensive coordinator with us. Didn't quite work out. You know, we're moving up. We're getting back.
Yeah. Lane Kiffin's probably not the best head coach on the planet, man. That guy needs to be managed. And I think he did well under Nick Saban, you know. So we'll see what he does. Where is he at? Florida International or Florida Atlantic now?
Yeah. I think you're right. He needs to be managed. He's a great offensive mind. I don't think he's got the mentality as a head coach, but offensive mind, he's great. But I just don't. I think it was too much for him to be the head coach at USC, and the offensive style he was trying to run there wasn't working. Too much passing, not taking advantage of the size on the line and running and you know, wearing down the linemen and linebackers, right, you know, so it wasn't opening up the middle. And that was just my opinion sitting on the sidelines. You know, we can all Monday morning quarterback, but when they started running the ball more, they started winning and looking more impressive.
Sure.
Well, the fact is Alabama breeds champions. USC does what? You know, just saying. So
what? They used to.
We did before Pete Carroll had to run from the scandal. I mean, that was a great team and a great organization. Pete Carroll's gone doing impressive things up there in Seattle. But we're rebuilding, okay, Robert? You knock it off, Mr. KC fan.
Kansas City?
Yeah, yeah. I'm a Chiefs fan, man.
Oh, man.
You got a football team? You got an NFL team?
Nah, you know, the only football I watch is really the only NFL football I watch. And you know, I may try and catch a game, you know, with some, you know, where I got old teammates or some of the Bama guys running around on the field. But as far as, you know, buying a T-shirt and stuff like that, I don't have a favorite sports team in general. I just kind of watched certain players and, you know, players that I like and guys that I played with in college and stuff like that.
More of a fan of the game, necessarily.
Yeah, for sure.
Team. Yeah, I agree. That's why I am with professional ball. But when it comes to college ball, growing up in Southern California, we didn't have a professional team. So I kind of hitched my wagon to the winningest team, you know, when I'm, you know, 11, 12 years old watching football. So,
sure.
You know, had it been UCLA winning back then, I'd have been a LA
fan. A Bruins
fan. Yeah, which I'm so thankful I'm not. I could have ruined my life, as they say. That would have been bad. Mom.
I've never heard that before. That's a good one.
Oh, yeah. When they play each other, you know, the crosstown rivalry, man, the T-shirts on all the students and stuff. Don't let your kids ruin your life. You know, University of Spoiled Children and all that kind of fun stuff. It's a good rivalry, man. It's fun.
Is they said UCLA is where all the spoiled kids go?
No, yeah, because USC is a private school.
Okay, yeah, that's where I was going with that. I was like, man,
yeah.
I actually drove past there, competing in at Worlds in a jiu-jitsu tournament. I drove by the Coliseum there.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, this place is in the middle of the hood, man. What?
Dude, it's scary.
It's got a fence around it. I was like, what the hell? What?
Yeah, man. And the parking lot is so small. So a lot of people will just, you know, let you park in their front yard. You pay them 10, 15 bucks. And you pray to God your car's there when you get back.
Yeah.
But every time it's been there. So cheers to the people, man. They're good people, you know, making a couple extra bucks, being entrepreneurial, and it works out.
Tax free at that.
Exactly. Good for them, man. You know what I mean? Like, why the heck not? You're going to be disturbed by all these idiots running up and down your street for a football game. Get yourself a couple bucks.
Yeah.
So I want to go back to your LFA title fight real quick with Brendan Allen. It was the first time in your professional career you went the full 25 minutes. Were you worried at all about your stamina going into the fight, especially after you almost finished him in the first? And were you worried about maybe blowing your wad, as they say?
Man, not really, you know. Like I said, I prepare to go 25 minutes, but if it goes 25 seconds, that's cool. In those first three rounds, there were several times where I had him wobbled, and, you know, I did kind of blow my wad a little bit, but not to the point where I just couldn't, you know. It wasn't like a Shane Carwin, Brock Lesnar type moment or anything like that.
Yeah.
But I was certainly swinging for the fences, and I think that's why I didn't get the knockout. Instead of snapping my punches and keeping them at the end of my punches, after that first time I dropped them in the first round, I kind of smothered my punches and, you know, just not a whole lot of power when you're only throwing like a half a punch or a quarter of a punch, you know. So I got in really close, too close, and, you know, I made that adjustment from that Brendan Allen fight to the Natal fight because I also had Natal rocked. But instead of, you know, getting close, I kind of backed up, measured distance with my jab, and threw that first left. And, you know, that kind of, you know, started the, you know, I kind of saw that his eyes were, you know, I saw it in his face that he was ready to go. And then I threw that second one, and that's what dropped him. So, man, we fought at quite a pace those first three rounds. And then those second two rounds, those last two rounds was more of a grappling exchanges, and then we're striking exchanges. So, you know, I'm always ready. My cardio is always going to be good and on point. You know, I just wish that I would have, you know, took a step back instead of pressing forward on those punches. You know, I definitely would have knocked Brendan Allen out for sure if I'd had done the same thing to him that I did to Natal. Took a step back, measured with my jab, and fired my left. I for sure would have finished Brendan Allen.
Yeah, that's what I noticed, the growth from one fight to the next. I was really impressed with that, how you did that. You had him stunned, and instead of getting excited, you knew you had the power in your hands. You measured, and your technique looked like it was crisper, and your punches were tighter. You know, everything looked like you were throwing, man. I saw leaps and bounds of improvement from, you know, just that one fight to the next, from Brendan Allen to Rafael Natal. I'm excited to see what you're going to do next, man. You keep growing and improving like you have been. It's going to be amazing.
Yeah, you know, and, man, I don't know. When I stepped into that UFC cage, I thought it would just be so big. And, you know, I thought there would just be a whole lot of ground to cover and a lot of, you know, range and distance. But, man, the cage only came up to, like, my shoulders. I was like, man, this, you know, and it wasn't as big as I thought it was. So, you know, I'm sure they do have a bigger cage because I've seen John Jones stand in the cage and he's quite a bit taller than me. And, you know, the cage was almost taller than he was. So I'm pretty sure they have different size cages. The UFC yeah. does. Yeah. Maybe that was just a smaller one and, you know, a very good, you know, size cage to kind of, you know, get your first fight, you know. So a lot of the stars were kind of lined up for me to have a very good, impressive debut in the UFC.
Yeah, impressive it was. Do you think that competing at such a high level in another sport like you did there at Alabama with such a professional and well-oiled machine, you think that gives you an advantage over other guys that you say, you know, they've been training in whatever martial arts since they're 3 or 4, but they've never really been competing, you know, on that level? Even guys who are like NCAA champions, they've never gone out in front of, you know, 90,000, you know, I'm exaggerating a bit, but seat stadium and have all those people and all that pressure on them. You think that gives you an edge against some of the other fighters?
90,000 is not an exaggeration. I played in stadiums that said like 110, 115,000, oh, wow. You know. So, man, absolutely. You know, there's a lot of noise, a lot, and then you have to do like media stuff. So those 5 years that I was at Alabama kind of groomed me to be able to deal with the media and perform under pressure and, you know, kind of just get the job done, so to speak. So, you know, when I step into a cage now, you know, with all the noise and the lights, and when I tell you what, man, there's not a place, a more hostile environment than Death Valley, LSU stadium on a Saturday night after dark. Something happens when the sun goes down, that place goes nuts. We played, in 2008, we played we went to triple overtime with them, and man, there's no way, there's no verbal communication at all. It didn't matter how close you were or how loud you were yelling. Man, I'm pretty sure that game measured on the Richter scale. That's how loud those people were. So, man, if you can perform in that place under those circumstances and conditions, man, that pretty much, you know, you can perform anywhere.
Yeah, I think that's true, especially that game in particular. I remember watching that one with my buddy Jason and the screams and yells from his couch, which I was sitting and he was not. You could probably hear him screaming and yelling, man. But, you know, that makes a good point because especially the position you played at linebacker, you know, you see that hole open up and it's just you and a running back coming at you. And it's like, I got to stop him here. You know, that's when you feel that whole Death Valley screaming at you to miss the tackle or whatever, you know.
You can't hear like one word in particular unless they start a chant or whatever.
Yeah.
It's deafening loud in that place.
I bet. And LSU does not like you at all.
Oh, absolutely not.
A touch of a rivalry between you guys over the past couple decades and so on, but it does make for exciting football. So what led you to pursue more of a career in MMA and to keep pushing in that direction after your tenure at Alabama?
Well, I got on with the Cleveland Browns for a hot second, got cut, went to Canada, got cut, played a year of arena ball, and was just pretty much said, you know, if it's not the NFL and competing at the highest level, then I don't want to do it. And, you know, came back to Alabama. Did the 9-to-5 thing for a little bit. Man, but just so bored. You know, that's just not me, man. I don't think I could ever. I mean, I did, but, you know, if I had to wake up every morning, sit in traffic every morning, you know, I was working in a call center, so I was talking to people who didn't, you know, those people on the phone would talk so reckless to you. I take that back. I said that LSU is probably the most hostile environment. Talking to somebody who's trying to buy something online but can't. You only have a certain amount of time to do it. That is the most hostile environment, man. And there's nothing you can do, at least at LSU. You know, I could, like, you know, ear hole somebody or tackle somebody or, you know, do something like that. But, you know, you have to remain calm and collective. You know, that might be the biggest contribution to performing under pressure. Actually, not
recommend all the up-and-comers to spend some time in a customer service call center a little bit.
Yeah, man. It's crazy, man. Those people will talk so reckless to you, and you know.
Yeah.
For sure, just, you know. Well, you know, I'm going to come see you then, you know.
I always try to remain polite.
I just, cause man, it's crazy, man. I don't think that anybody would say some of the stuff that I heard to my face. You know, everybody's, you know, a superhero over the phone. And I'm just like, man, if you were standing in front of me right now, you know, I would try to kick you in the head right now. But
yeah, how quickly their tone would change if they knew who they were talking.
Man, it's not even like, I don't know, the people I'm talking to on the phone is like, they're very, you know, confident over the phone, but they just don't seem like the people who would just talk like this to my face. And, you know, I definitely wouldn't tolerate, and there's just, you know, not a lot that I could do over the phone. So definitely glad to be out of that environment.
I'd rather be getting punched in the face and wrestle around with sweaty men, as Anthony Rumble Johnson put it, than talk to these people on the phone.
Yeah, no, that's his quote, and you know, he's exactly right, and I'm with him on that.
Yeah, it's kind of like you start thinking, like, what drives somebody to be just a complete dick to a perfect stranger like that over the phone? Like, who drives you to be that way?
Crazy. And then, you know, just sitting still all day and talking on the phone and sitting in front of a computer, that's just not the way I'm programmed. And, you know, I was just truly unsatisfied with life. So I just, you know, I walked into a gym one day and, you know, fell in love with the sport right then and there.
So when you're not training, you're not working out and everything like that, what does an Eric Anders do for to relax, to just hang out, have fun?
Man, I love to eat and I love to watch movies. So I'm up on all my movies just about. And
do you have a favorite?
That's pretty much it. My favorite movie of all time?
Yeah.
It's got to be Braveheart or Pulp Fiction.
All right, good choices.
Yeah.
Both good. Yeah,
probably Braveheart.
So is that and those are two different genres of movies. Is there a genre you go to, like horror movies, or just more like thrillers, action, suspense, anything like that?
Definitely not horror movies, because I think that they're funny and kind of corny.
Yeah.
They're kind of predictable. You know, the little blonde girl who's all innocent, she always lives through the end and everybody else dies. And, you know, whatever. So horror, they kind of make me laugh. You like the movie Get Out, like everybody raved about that. And, you know, said it was a good, you know, horror movie or whatever, but I was just kind of like, you know, this is kind of stupid, you know?
Yeah.
but I definitely like action. Arnold Schwarzenegger is probably my favorite actor. You know, his old stuff anyway. I tried to watch a movie of his recently called Aftermath, and it just, this isn't Arnold.
Yeah, I think it's time for him to retire, as much as he wants to keep doing it.
Yeah, you know, but I like the old guys, you know, like, I like the old action movies. Comedies are all right. I don't like scripted comedies. So movies that are like, you know, just kind of like witty, funny. Like Will Ferrell, I can't stand him. I think that everything that he does, it just sounds scripted. And, you know, he's always just running around naked. But, you know, I'm not hating, you know, the guy's, you know, a gazillionaire. And, you know, makes, you know, a lot of people go see his movies and love his movies. But just not my cup of tea.
Can't please everybody, man. But yeah, it's working for him.
Yeah, no, you're not the first to say that. I've actually known a lot of people that can't stand his movies as well. So, just something about him.
Yeah. Wedding Crashers and Anchorman. I like those two movies, but like Step Brothers, I'm like, this is the stupidest plot I've ever heard of in my life.
Yeah, a bunch of grown men acting like children.
Well, it's not even like. Listen, man, his parents are rich or whatever, so they, you know, they just seem like the type to just kick him out and just, you know, give him a debit card and tell him not to spend too much.
Yeah, get him out of their hair.
Yeah.
So, since my cousin seems to be a little on the lost side there.
Sorry.
So what? When do you plan to get back to fighting? When do you plan to get to your next fight booked, or at least signed, anything?
I'm actually lobbying for a fight now. You know, I'd like to fight anytime in September. I want to get on. Like I tweeted out to Jack Marshman about fighting in Philly on the 16th, September 16th. But you know, I haven't heard anything back from that. He's probably like, "Who the hell is this guy?"
I think he booked something just recently too.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, I think I was reading that he booked something. I can't remember exactly who he booked, but I remember reading something that he booked. I remember seeing something on Instagram about it.
Dang, so I just keep calling out guys with fights, huh? as soon as possible, you know. I'd like to fight again. I really, really, really want to fight in Madison Square Garden November 4th. But, man, every time I turn on, you know, flip through my Instagram, they got, you know, Jorge Masvidal and Stephen Thompson. I'm like, damn. If they putting guys like, you know, first of all, it's Madison Square Garden, so everybody wants to fight in Madison Square Garden. Two, you know, that's, you know, a contender fight right there. So if those are the kind of matchups they're looking for that Madison Square Garden fight, then, you know, I probably don't stand too much of a chance. So, man, probably most likely I'll fight again if somebody gets hurt and they need somebody, a middleweight to replace them or something like that. So, you know. Yeah, I'll play my position, play my role right now, but, you know, we'll see what happens.
Well, speaking of that Madison Square Garden card, being headlined tentatively right now by Michael Bisping defending the middleweight title against George St. Pierre.
Yeah.
What do you think about all that?
Man, Bisping's been in this game for a very long time, and he deserves to make a little bit of money, I think. I think the GSP is just going to take him down. Very bad matchup for Michael Bisping.
However, he's got great.
I think that George's chin has worn down over the years. So, you know, we'll see. I wouldn't be surprised if Bisping knocked him out. But more than likely, we're probably looking at a unanimous decision for GSP.
You think he'll be able to get him down? I mean, Bisping's takedown defense is, I think it's underrated, man. He's not an easy guy to get down anymore. He used to be against, like, Tim Kennedy. You know, he was getting taken down a little bit more at will. But since then, he's improved quite a bit. And I think GSP being a smaller man, my opinion, is just going to have a little tougher time getting him down.
Man, GSP's probably quite a bit faster. That guy's been training and hasn't gotten beat up in the last several years. So he's, you know, only been training. He's done his mock weight cuts and whatever, you know. So, you know, that guy's an athlete by science. You know,
it's true.
That guy, you know, he trains with the Canadian wrestling team and, you know, does gymnastics and all that other good stuff. So, I think GSP is a little bit better wrestler than Tim Kennedy. So,
yeah, I'd agree with you there. His takedowns, at least, are definitely more diverse.
And he's probably a smarter fighter than Bisping. Bisping has a puncher's chance, you know, obviously. Well, more than a puncher's chance, you know. He's the champ for a reason. Man, that's a tough one. I think GSP is going to win. But I like Bisping, man.
Yeah, and then GSP is going to have to fight, if he wins, he's going to have to fight Robert Whittaker, too, according to his contract. So that would be an interesting fight.
Robert Whittaker is impossible to take down. You saw that with Yoel Romero and all his other fights. Natal couldn't take him down. Yoel Romero couldn't take him down. Who did he fight before that?
He fought, was it Brunson?
Brunson couldn't take him
Brunson.
Down.
He fought
Brunson had
Ryan
the
Hall.
Absolute wrong game plan.
Yeah, run at him with his chin and he wanted to get out there quick and try to make a statement, man. And Whittaker was too much for him as far as his ability to absorb those punches and keep swinging himself.
Yeah, I don't know why he did that, you know. He certainly took it, you know. Derek Brunson certainly set himself back, I think.
Yeah.
I think Derek Brunson is going to be the next champ. I think that if him and Whittaker rematch, you know, if he comes out there and does what he does, I think he's a very difficult guy to beat. So I'd like to see that matchup again.
Yeah,
I picked Brunson to win that fight, and then I saw what he was doing, and I was like, wait a second, what's going on here?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Brunson beat Anderson Silva. That was a bad decision.
Yeah, me too. I was like, this is crazy, man. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Brunson beat the hell out of Anderson Silva.
Yeah. And now he's getting the returning Lyoto Machida. So if he fights the way that he fought against Whittaker against Machida, he's going to have a bad time as well. He needs to fight the way against Silva.
He's going to retire Lyoto Machida.
Yeah, it's a bad matchup for Lyoto, man.
He's going to retire Lyoto Machida. I think he's going to have the same game plan he did against Dan Kelly. He's going to sit there and wait for the opportunity to present itself, stick him with the left hand, and, you know, if he needs to follow up, he will. But, you know, I think that
Yeah, that was a scary knockout.
Bad trouble. Yeah. Yeah. It's, kind of, it's funny though, you know, when that fight came about, people were like, "Oh, Dan Kelly, Derek Brunson." I'm like, "Dog, listen, Derek Brunson is finna slaughter. He's finna kill. Dan Kelly's like 40. Hello? Rashad Evans would have put. I think Rashad Evans, you know, he's a little, you know, gun shy now. You know, his chin's probably gone, so he's probably not looking to get into brawls anymore. But." Rashad Evans, if he would have pushed the pace and did that, you know, he'd have beat Dan Kelly. But Dan Kelly's beat some people, man. He beat that Carlos Antonio, Carla De Zapata, whatever his name is.
Antonio Carlos Jr. Yeah, Jr.
So, man, he's not a bad fighter, man. But I just think that guys like Derek Brunson, man, they're just too much for 99% of the human population.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think he shot himself in the foot a little bit there, but he'll come back. He's definitely going to get a shot at the belt, you know, in the next couple of years. And depending on who it is, man, I give him a good chance at it. He's a fun fighter. He's a good fighter, and he's very well rounded, which is
rough. He's strong as hell. I think the only fight that he's dropped, you know, was that he just got beat was Yoel Romero.
And to be fair probably, on that, he was actually dominating that fight until he gassed out for the first two rounds.
For sure. Yep. Yeah, and I think it might have been a little too soon in Derek Brunson's career for Yoel Romero, but, you know, you got to take those opportunities when they come.
Yeah, of course, man. Yep. Yeah, and him beating my local fighter, Lorenz Larkin, too, man, that was an impressive fight. Even though I'm a big supporter of my local boy, Lorenz, I did have Brunson winning that fight pretty clearly.
Man, Lorenz Larkin, he's a sleeper, man. That dude used to fight a heavyweight, now he's fighting at welterweight. Yeah. That's cool, man. He actually, as an amateur, he fought Walt Harris, who's a UFC heavyweight.
Mm-hmm. And a big guy at that, yeah.
Yeah, a big heavyweight.
Yeah, Lorenz is legit, man.
He's definitely not scared to get in there with anybody. So,
nope, it's a Riverside blood, buddy. You gotta watch out for it. You're tough.
So, following up on Lorenz Larkin and everything. What do you think about this whole? What's the word I'm looking for? Just fighters leaving the UFC to go to Bellator for just money instead of fighting in the top organization in the world. Do you have any feelings on that?
You got to do what you got to do, man. If you're not happy somewhere, then, you know, don't let the name of the company be what keeps you there. If you can make more money elsewhere, that's the name of the game. You know, if you don't see yourself winning a championship or with that belt around your waist, then, you know, whatever, go to Bellator. You know, do what Phil Davis did. Phil Davis was never going to win at 205, not a championship anyway, so. Why not go to Bellator and, you know, beat everybody in Bellator and be the Bellator champ? Get money, be the face of the organization, and on top of that, you can rack up sponsor money, pretty easy if you can wear it, you know, in the cage, in the competition. I think the only thing that's killing Bellator is they keep putting on those, you know, Ken Shamrock, Royce Gracie, Royce Gracie fights, man. No one wants to see Kimbo and Dada 5000. You know, who the hell is that? That was like Dada's way. That was like his first professional, like real professional fight that wasn't in the backyard.
Yeah.
Who wants to see that, man?
No, I agree with that spectacle. That to me is a spectacle.
Yeah, you know, and if you do want to do that, they certainly can't be the main event. You know, they need to grow and cultivate guys like they're doing with Michael Chandler.
Yeah.
Michael Chandler and AJ McKee and the Irish kid Gallagher. They need to do that with more fighters instead of, you know, putting in these, you know, these has-beens. And I'm like, you know, those guys are legends in the sport. I mean, no disrespect, but man, at 50 years old, man, you probably shouldn't be competing in MMA anymore.
Especially main eventing over your title fights. That's not how you do it. The UFC had Brock Lesnar and still main evented the show with Nunes and Tate.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's what they're supposed to do, you know. Brock, but at the same time, Brock, he's not really in there to be there, you know. He's just in there to collect a check and then bounce back to the WWE, so he's not really,
Do you think that Jones fight ever happens?
I think they should. Why not?
Heck yeah, that'd be a fun fight.
There's, I don't see anybody in that middleweight, in that light heavyweight division beating John Jones. You know what he really proved after that Daniel Cormier fight? Man, the guy went through all that, did all that stupid stuff, got back on track. Man, I heard that John Jones, before too long ago, he didn't even train in between fights. He would just fly in for camp and train, yep, and, you know, go beat people up. So now the guy, you know, he's living in New Mexico, trains full time, and, you know, seems to really have his life in order. And so I think he fought Daniel Cormier way better than he did the first time. And I was there live, and, you know, mm-hmm, when they fought the first time. And I was just really impressed, you know, knocking out Daniel Cormier, certainly. And he's the only guy to beat DC. So, and now that Rumble Johnson's gone, I guess the only guy that stands a chance against John Jones is Alexander Gustafsson. So, man, you know, whatever. Go fight a heavyweight. Go fight Brock Lesnar. Go fight, you know, Cain Velasquez or Fabricio Werdum. You know,
all those
go make money.
Yeah, become a dual division champion. So,
yeah, I don't know if he could make 85, but if he did, it'd be, you know, it'd be hell for a lot of people.
That would be fun.
Man, so, but I think he should, you know, why not? Go for it. You're not going to taint your record, man. You're the man. You know, people already regard you. The second his shin touched Cormier's head, everybody was like, oh, he's the GOAT. So, you know, people think that he's the best of all time already. You know, go prove it. You know, go fight other divisions. You know, Conor certainly put together that template. You know, you can go make a lot of money, you know, fighting outside your weight class, especially if you've dominated the division like he has over the past, you know, 6 or 7 years now.
It's amazing how much better he looks when he's not fighting after a weekend of cocaine, as he says.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
yeah, that's a scary dude when he's focused, man. When he's focused like that, he had no ring rust, which I expected to see some, maybe a little bit in getting the timing right for Cormier, but once he found it,
yeah, you know, he took some time off and fought Ovince St. Preux.
Yeah.
And did not look like, you know, he didn't look super impressive against Ovince St. Preux. And I don't know if that's because Ovince St. Preux is, you know, of the same stature, maybe a little bit bigger than John Jones.
Mm-hmm.
But he definitely seemed a little more hesitant and tentative against Ovince St. Preux after a long layoff than he did against Daniel Cormier over an even longer layoff. So, I don't know, man. That guy's special, man.
I agree.
So, speaking of money fights, spectacles, all that good stuff.
Got to do it.
I hate asking about it, and I really hate asking fighters about it, but I kind of feel like I have to just to get the show numbers. What are you doing next weekend?
I'll be in Vegas next weekend for a World's Jiu-Jitsu tournament.
Are you going to be watching the big boxing match?
I will. Well, yeah, I'm going to try to sneak in the back door somewhere.
What do you think about that whole thing?
Man, listen. Win, lose, or draw, Conor McGregor has won.
Yep.
Like 3 years ago, however long ago, that guy was collecting food stamps and government assistance just so that he could train. Now he's finna fight for over $100 million. So round of applause for Mr. McGregor.
And cheers to that, man.
Oh, yeah, you can't hate that. Nobody can hate on that. I don't even hate on that. I'm not even a big McGregor fan.
Yeah. And if he knocks out Floyd Mayweather, not only does he get paid, but he's going to get me paid because I bet on McGregor.
Did you bet the odds, or do you think he wins?
I bet the odds.
Oh, okay.
I bet the odds. I think I'm locked in at like 5-1 or 6-1 or something like that. So when it first came out, it was like 7-1. So I should have jumped on it then. But man, that guy, he's going to be difficult to beat. Man, I think his fight IQ is a lot higher than what people think.
Mm-hmm.
He's certainly much bigger and will probably be closer to 170 pounds when he fights Floyd versus Floyd, who's going to probably be the exact same size the next day that he is when he gets off the scale. Man, he's probably going to be 160 pounds. So, I just think that Conor's special, and you know, he's got a really strong, he's, you know, strong, long, and hits hard. And now that they're fighting in 8-ounce gloves, I think that's going to present an even bigger problem for Floyd. But at the same time, we are talking about Floyd Mayweather and not Paulie. Yeah. So, you know, I think the Floyd's the best of all time at doing what he does, at hit without getting hit. Probably not going to knock Conor out, but he's certainly going to touch Conor's body and, you know, wear him out. And we'll see what Conor's cardio is looking like after 12 rounds.
Yeah, I think that's the main thing everybody's worried about him, you know, saying he's not going to knock him out. It's like, well, he doesn't have to touch that chin and knock him out. He could work the body and just get him exhausted. People are forgetting about that. I'm glad you said it.
And that was one of the things Paulie mentioned, that Conor does not like getting punched to the body.
Yeah, well, Paulie needs to release a video of him actually landing a punch against Conor McGregor. Every time I, you know, get on my Twitter, you know, it's Paulie saying that, you know, this, that, and the third. And I'm just like, well, then put out the video then.
Yeah, I'm kind of over Paulie right now. Not a personal thing, just that the whole drama, that soap opera has run its course, man. Let's focus on the fight at hand. And if Conor makes a good showing and decides not to return to the UFC, you know, I think you probably get a million pay-per-view buys out of Conor versus Paulie, maybe.
No, hell no. Listen, if Conor beats Floyd, the only person with him to fight is Canelo, and that's it. Or maybe Triple G.
Okay. Oh, against Canelo, whoever wins Canelo Triple G, have him fight that guy?
Well, I'm just saying, like, if I just beat the best of all time, you think I'm going to fight some retired guy, some guy who's retired and, you know, he does, you know, commentating? No.
I didn't even think about him versus Canelo or Triple G, man. That's dangerous.
Why would I fight Paulie? You know, y'all saw what I did to him already. Y'all saw the video. I don't need to spar. I don't need to fight him. I'm not going to make $100 million off of Paulie.
That's true.
If I was Conor, I would retire. I would never put on a pair of gloves again. I'd cash out, and that'd be that.
Peace out. Me and the family are set for life. Y'all have a good one.
Two-division champ. Knocked out, you know, beat the best, you know, what people would say is the best boxer of all time. With not even one boxing match. I was a professional boxer, and I just beat the best of all time. So I'm done with this combat stuff, man. I'm just, you know.
Yeah, he'll be bigger than life at that point.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he'll be bigger than life.
Yeah, for sure. You know, just buy a little, not a little boat, but I'd buy a boat and just, you know, take my time with life, man.
Live on the boat.
You got any fights you're looking forward to? Any of the fights coming up that are scheduled that you you're interested in seeing? Like really looking forward to watching.
I like the Bisping GSP fight. Anytime Wonderboy fights, you know. Again, you know, I think that Jorge Masvidal and Stephen Thompson fight is going to be a good one.
Oh yeah,
they two totally contrasting styles, striking styles. I think both of them are going to look to keep it on the feet. And, you know, I think that that's a tough one to call. Stephen Boy, Wonder Boy, I think that the problem that he presents is I don't think anybody manages range and distance quite as well as he does. You know, those Woodley fights, I think if he was a little bit more active, but with a guy like Woodley, man, you kind of have to either be in his grill or at distance, I feel like. Anything in between where he can get his hands on you, he's going to give you that Robbie Lawler treatment, man.
Yeah, lights out.
Yeah, exactly. So,
yeah, I was very, very disappointed in his showings on those Woodley fights, man. I was rooting for him so much.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying, man. Some guys like him, Derek Brunson, man, you got to approach those guys cautiously, man. You can't just, you know, you can't treat him like he's Jake Ellenberger. Hell no.
No.
Or Matt Brown or anything like that. So,
yeah.
Who's Diego Sanchez finna fight?
Matt Brown.
Matt Brown.
Yeah. I guess Diego's going back to welterweight.
It's just going to be a slugfest. They're going to sit in a phone booth and just try to pick each other apart.
And see who gets knocked out first.
Yeah. See who's more shop worn.
Man, it's Matt Brown probably going to get knocked out if that's the way they fight. You better take him down or do something.
Yeah, but Diego's no slouch on the ground, man. His wrestling and jiu-jitsu is pretty damn good.
I know it, but, man, it's hard to knock somebody out off your back. You know?
Yes, that's true.
Man, what other fights are coming up?
I'm looking forward to Dillashaw Garbrandt. That's going to be a fun one.
Good night, Dillashaw.
No, boy.
No, don't say that.
Good night, Dillashaw.
He's going to get his chin?
Yes.
Oh,
listen,
man.
I think Dillashaw tries to be too much like Dominic Cruz. And, Dillashaw beat the hell out of Dominic Cruz. And Dominic Cruz is better at being Dominic Cruz than TJ Dillashaw is at being Dominic Cruz. So
maybe. You know. My thought is it's going to come down to the wrestling, wrestling angles and takedowns and different options. I think the wrestling aspect that I think TJ has more entries and more ways to get a guy down than Cruz does. I think that's going to be the X factor. That's my opinion, but
maybe.
Go ahead.
You may be right. You know, I think that Dillashaw is definitely a better and more accomplished wrestler than Cody Garbrandt. But, man, I think that Cody Garbrandt's speed, you know, obviously everybody knows about his power, man. You know, he's like 12-0 with 11 knockouts or something like that, 12 knockouts or something like that. But I think what is very underrated about Cody Garbrandt is his speed. Now, luckily these for Dillashaw that, you know, he's seen and he's felt Cody Garbrandt, you know, in sparring and whatnot. But, you know, Cody Garbrandt's also done that with you know, they know each other. So,
yeah,
I'm putting my money on Cody, man. I'm not a TJ fan, but, you know.
This is a very pro-TJ show. That's all right, though, you know.
He's
not
in California, though, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So, y'all are a little biased, I see.
Yeah.
Where's your
well, I was also I've been on his bandwagon since what he did to Henan Brow, which I didn't think was going to happen. So that was like inspiring.
Okay. Yeah.
But here's a fight for you coming up.
I don't know what's up with that guy, man. That guy, I think, you know, he may be done, man. He lost and now he can't fight it. You know, he can't make 135. Like when he fought in California, they say he can fight, but it's got to be at 140.
Yeah.
Because last time he tried to make 35, he passed out or some shit.
Yeah, that's when he was supposed to try to get his belt back from TJ, and then he passed out, and then Joe Soto stepped in on a couple hours' notice to fight TJ.
Yeah. So, man.
So here's a fight for you then real quick in your division. Luke Rockhold, David Branch.
Man. And this is probably on me, but I didn't even know who David Branch was until this fight came about. I don't think I've ever seen that guy fight. I need to do some research, but man, I think I don't know, man. Luke Rockhold presents a quite a challenge for a lot of guys. The only thing that's going to save David Branch, from what I understand, he's a pretty good boxer, and I don't think that Luke Rockhold has a chin anymore. However, I need to see what David Branch's ground game looks like, because Luke Rockhold has submitted a lot of guys in the UFC, so he's probably going to have an advantage. But he doesn't shoot for takedowns too much, so we'll see what happens, man.
Yeah, Luke waits for people to make a mistake and then gets on top.
Yeah.
His ground and pound top game is ridiculous.
His submission game is really good too. So, I saw a video of David Branch. You know, I guess he was sitting in a barbershop or something. You know, talking to the phone, talking about he was going to knock Lucas. Lucas, what are you talking? So, you know, I don't know, man. I don't know too much about David Branch. That's a tough one to call. Give me another one.
I think that's the main one coming off of maybe somebody, a fight between two guys you might actually see pretty soon. Hector Lombard and Anthony Smith.
Man, Hector's a scary dude, man. Anthony Smith, you know, that's a pretty big athletic guy too. So, I don't know. Hector's chin is gone. But man, that guy hits like a ton of bricks and he's extremely quick and fast. So
do you think USADA is to blame for his fall off?
Man, I think a lot of guys have been hit by the USADA bug, man.
Yeah. What is it? Junior Dos Santos just got hit. I was looking forward to that fight.
You can look at some of these guys' physiques and the way they fought before, post and, you know, pre and post USADA, and man, some of these guys is not even the same person. I think Alistair Overeem is the biggest example of USADA. when that guy fought Brock Lesnar.
Uber.
That guy was man, who is this? This guy came off an assembly line.
Yeah, that dude was chiseled. The Uberine was chiseled.
Talking about horse meat, man. You want to eat no horse? Yeah. Come on, man.
Horse beat my ass.
Yeah. So, you know, I think a lot of guys have kind of fallen off a little bit.
At least the IV part of it, you know, not being able to rehydrate with the IV at minimum, I think, is affecting a lot of fighters.
I don't know. I used to use an IV when I was an amateur, but now I don't, and I feel, you know, really good. Like, I don't think it's too difficult to, and I cut quite a bit of weight, man. I walk around at like 220, you know, anywhere between 220 and 230.
Damn.
I was like 238 whenever they called me to fight in the Saul. So I cut my weight, and then I was like 216 whenever I fought the next night. Weighed in at 185 and some change, and was 216 the night of the fight. So just eating and drinking. So, you know, it's possible, and maybe I'm just young enough that my body can do that. So I don't think the IV is just, you know, I used to think, man, I got to have an IV. There's no way I can rehydrate, yada, yada, yada. But then sometimes using the IV, I just feel like really big and stiff and heavy. And, you know, I think that's kind of counterintuitive to what you want. You want to be loose and relaxed and be able to fight, you know, be able to move and whatnot as a fighter. So, I don't use the IV anymore, obviously.
Well, that's good. So you're already with it. But all right, I think we're gonna end the interview here, man. If you got anything to plug, you got any you want to plug your social media, any websites or anything? I know you have your own website.
Yeah. You guys can check me out at on Twitter and Instagram at Eric Anders, ERYKANDERS, or check out my website ericanders.net, and I want to say a quick shout out to some of my sponsors, Pitbull Labs, EW Motion Therapy, Spartan Fitness, obviously the gym that I train at, TAP Together Assisting People, Magic Box Conversation Club, and Try One Cryotherapy, and a lot of support coming out of those people.
That's awesome. Well, I appreciate your time, Eric, man. I'd love to get you back anytime, especially maybe after your next fight gets booked or anything like that. We'd love to talk to you again.
Yeah, man, absolutely. Anytime y'all call, I'll pick up for sure.
Awesome, man. Yeah, I got you in my contact. So, all right, man, you enjoy your Saturday, the rest of your day. Have a good one, man. Hope to see you booked soon.
Appreciate you, fellas.
Thanks.
Have a good one.
You too.
All right, so that was Eric Anders. Great guy to talk to, actually. Just seems like a real dude, you know?
Yeah, it was a real good interview. Easy guy to talk to. I'd say it's in our top two, for sure.
Yeah, top two interviews, easily. So we do, before we end the show, we have a little bit of business to get down to. As you all know, we have the giveaway that's been announced for the last week or so for the JBL Flip speaker. Bluetooth, wireless, everything, you know, it's pretty sweet. Yep. Anyways,
you saw the deal, everybody. You know what you're going to get when you win this great prize. I have the JBL Flip 3 personally, man. I love it. So 4 is even better.
Yeah. So we are going to, I got the drawing. I'm going to record it on camera with my hand so I could put it up on the page after the person collects their prize.
That's right. You got to listen to win.
Yep. You got to listen to win. So here we go. It's just a bunch of names in a hat, in the paper. You can see my hand on the video because we are not fancy or anything. So I'm going to pull it down, pull it out now. And all right, there it goes. Your winner, Nikki Moore Rhodes.
Way
so
to go,
congratulations, Nikki.
Congratulations.
You listen to the show, get a hold of us on the website, probably get a hold of me since I have the actual product. And give me all your information, and we'll send it out to you.
Let's not forget to mention who gave us such a great prize to offer up.
Yeah, that is courtesy of Aaron Alanis, my boy, Southern California Verizon. Thank you, Aaron. I appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Aaron, we appreciate it, man. Thank you very much. And Nikki's going to be thanking you as well. Enjoying the heck out of this great speaker.
Yeah, as long as she listens. I hope she listens. I'm going to count those numbers, girl. Anyways, Joe, plug your social media. Let's get out of here.
Yes, sir. You can find me at jhud45 on Twitter or MMA to the Max Joe on Instagram.
All right, and you can find me on Twitter at itsrockrobster. Find me on Instagram at MMA to the Max Rob. Find our show on Facebook at facebook.com/MMA to the Max podcast. And look for us pretty soon on lastwordonsports.com. To be exact, lastwordonmma.com, which is a subsidiary website. And we'll be on there really soon. We're also looking to get on iHeartRadio pretty soon, so check us out for that soon.
We're growing. Catch us at the bottom while you can, because we're going to get too big for y'all.
Yeah. So, anything else you got, Joe?
I'm good, man. Everyone have a great weekend.
All right, everybody. Take care. Enjoy your weekend.
The following podcast is a W2M Network original production. Visit W2Mnet.com for all of our other great podcasts, plus news, reviews, articles, and opinions from the worlds of wrestling, video games, football, and entertainment.